According to the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, there are approximately 31 million entrepreneurs in the United States, comprising roughly 16% of the adult workforce. George Morris has walked the entrepreneur's journey from starting with zero business experience and launching a business during awful economic times during the dot-com crash, to building a best place to work and a fastest growing company. Morris is a certified business growth coach and implementer who happily shares his mistakes with his clients. Morris is adamant that business fundamentals unlock the potential of teams and organizations. In Morris's view, far too often, companies pile on unnecessary tasks, systems, and projects with slow growth. He helps companies shred organizational debt to accelerate their growth. By focusing on their goals and the actions necessary in order to get there, Morris joined me this week to discuss business growth, implementation, and the proper way to run an organization efficiently and effectively. I'm Kevin McShann. Let's have this conversation. Take a moment to welcome you to the program, and I'm super excited to talk to you this afternoon all about business growth and implementation. Great to be with you this afternoon, and happy Friday, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. Happy Friday to you, too.
Absolutely. Now, George, I'm curious if we can start our conversation by you telling me how you got started in business and how you define the term business prosperity.
Well, I mean, for me, it's just, I grew up in it. My father had a construction company when I was a kid. And so I was always around people who owned their own businesses. And so for me, it was very natural to go into a world where I jumped in, created my own business, ran it for 15 years, then created several other businesses. So it's always been a natural thing because that's what my father modeled. He didn't go work for somebody. He was doing it himself.
And tell me, what does the notion of being a lifelong entrepreneur mean to you?
Good question. Lifelong entrepreneur, to me, it means that throughout my life and for my foreseeable future, I want to pursue entrepreneurial endeavors, right? I don't like working for somebody in a corporate environment. I never have. I gave it a try for a few months, and it didn't really work out so well in terms of in most companies, they're just not set up the way that for me to thrive personally. And when I'm working with my clients, I like to make sure that they're building a really good team, because when a company can be set up right, the team actually has a voice, and the team's not there just to carry out something to do, but they're there to contribute to something greater, to doing something greater, and their talents are being used the right way.
Yeah, and I know that you have a very specific vision when it comes to a properly scaling a business. So I'm wondering if you can share that with me this afternoon.
Sure. So the methodology I follow is called scaling up. And scaling up was this system created by this entrepreneur named Vern Harnish. He's very successful. He's been doing this for 30 or 40 years at this point. And the system looks at how do you get a team together and aligned going in the right direction. What ends up happening a lot of times is teams think that they're aligned, but they're not. And what we do is we go in and take a look at them and say, here's where all of you guys are going. It's like rowing a boat, right? And if you get one person rowing forward, the other one rowing backwards, the other one rowing sideways, you're really not going to go anywhere fast. And so what I'm trying to do is get all of them turned in the right direction, looking at the right objectives and putting power behind it. Scaling up is a tool set that's used by almost 100,000 companies worldwide. So it's a proven tool. It works really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And George, I'm not sure that you know this, but next month is actually National Disability Employment Awareness Month, buddy. And I do a lot of work with businesses to encourage them to hire folks with disabilities. I actually have a disability myself. I was born with a cerebral palsy. So this notion of diversity, equity, and inclusion in business is important to me. So tell me about your notion of how we can create a more inclusive culture in business overall and for folks with disabilities as well.
You know, that's a great question, Kevin. You know, the way that I think about that is each of us have a unique skill set. And one of the things that I'll do with the team is I sit down and I work with them and I'll do a DISC assessment. So a DISC is a way of understanding how people think. And there's another assessment I'll do is called driving forces. And it looks at what motivates them, right? So when you look at a team of people and you profile them to see what their unique abilities are, there are certain things that stand out with each person that make them a better fit for various roles that you have in the company, right? So if a DISC profile comes back and it says that the way that DISC is set up, you have a high D or a high I, those are typically good salespeople. And if somebody has a high D and a high I, and they're sitting in a role of being an accountant, that's probably not the best role for them, because an accountant's not going to give them the type of fulfillment in their job. So when we're looking at a team, we want to go figure out what's the team's greatest strengths and what are the roles, what do the roles need, and match the right people up with the right roles. So we would just, if I was working with you, I would figure out what is your profile, what is your strengths, and then match your strengths up with, oh, we have a role here that matches those strengths up really nice. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. And you know, I'm curious to ask you your opinion on how you define successful business diversification. What is the key in your mind to successfully diversifying a business?
Yeah, you know, Kevin, that's a great question. I don't think I've ever had to define that. I can say, the way that I would look at it is when you have a business or you have a team that's extremely diverse, and that includes coming from different cultural backgrounds, ethnicities, religious backgrounds, profile backgrounds, the more diversity you have, the more perspective you have to solve a problem. If you get a team that is all the same and you see the world the same way and your understanding of the world's the same, you're going to miss out on potential opportunities that could really benefit the team, the organization, and everyone else. So by having a more diverse team in all aspects, you're going to have a better appreciation of how to attack a problem and build a solution that's really going to work for the maximum number of people.
Yeah, and George, I know that you work with businesses and organizations to sort of help them consolidate their systems and projects and sort of themes of their business to really accelerate their growth. So tell me, how in your mind do you successfully sort of consolidate or streamline a business to really accelerate growth?
Yeah. So Kevin, this is like the analogy I would give is a lot of the business I'm working with, they've been in business for a while. And so the analogy I like to say is, if they were a boat that's sitting out in the harbor for a while, it's going to collect barnacles. It's going to collect things on the side of the boat that could slow it down over time. And any business that's been created that's been running for a while, there are things that they just do that just organically grow, and they end up slowing the business down. So one of the things I come in and do is we work with this tool set that we call PACE. And it goes through and figures out all the main processes of a business. And it says, this is your process. Let's identify what that process is. And let's clean that process up so that the business can run better. So we find the core processes and that clean that up. And what people do wrong, I would say, is that they think about a business process. There's a matrix. There's a functional role. Let's think of them as your columns, right? So you have HR, marketing, sales, etc. These are your columns. Each one of them has things they need to do. So the way most companies think of the process is it's like a baton, a racing baton. Somebody in marketing does something, they hand it to someone in sales, they do something, and they hand it to somebody in the customer team to do something. But that is actually their process. And what we do is come in and say, this process that cuts across these three functions, somebody needs to own it to make sure that that process is running well. Because the three of the people that handle it, they're not looking at the big picture. They're just looking at their little world and what they do. And so that process becomes, it's almost like a cancer. It just grows and grows and grows, and it's not effective. So we come in and identify it and clean that up.
And George, I know that you were you're the former president of Entrepreneur Organization, the Colorado chapter. So I'm curious to also ask you about when you think about effective leadership in business, what do you think of and how do you think entrepreneurship has changed to meet the demands of the digital age today?
So first question is, the first question is really around
effective leadership in business. How do you define that?
My own philosophy is what they call a servant leader, right? Somebody who gets behind the team and asks the team how they can help. They're the ones that are going to get in there and help the team members. So if I was somebody on your team and you're reporting to me, I would come back to you and say, hey, Kevin, these are the things that I need done or we need done as a team. These are the things that we need to see at the end to make sure that it's actually done. Are you cool with taking up this effort? Are you cool with taking up this challenge? You come back to me and say, hey, George, I want to change this or that. And then, yes, if we change these few things up, I'm totally cool with it. Great. Kevin, you got this. How can I best support you to get this done? So it's not me saying, Kevin, did you get it done yet? It's me coming back and saying, Kevin, what can I do to help you? What can I do to knock your roadblocks down? And a lot of leaders don't act that way. They just take something, they hand it down to the team and say, do it. I told you to do it, just do it. And a good leader is going to come in and say, here's this thing that you need done. I love your support on it. If you've got it, I'll come back and I'll help you. I'll check in with you in a few days and I'll figure out how do I help you the best till you get this done.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me, George, when you look at today's business climate, and what ways do you think it's changed the most to adapt to the digital age of today?
You know, I don't know that I see anything that has changed entrepreneurial to adapt, but I've seen society adapt to becoming more entrepreneurs. So when I was a kid, the word entrepreneur was, I mean, if I said that to my friends, they wouldn't know what the hell I was talking about. And these days, it seems everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. And I think the big difference is technology has allowed everybody to make money and express themselves anywhere in the world. So now people are starting to see that they can use technology, they can use business as a way to find freedom and to find voice. And so I think society has adapted to become more entrepreneurial. but I don't think entrepreneurs have really adjusted to society.
And George, when we examine the term business tenacity, I'm wondering how you would define business tenacity yourself.
Business tenacity. Wow, Kevin, that's one I haven't thought of yet. I would think of, there's two things I think of. One is when you say business tenacity, the first thing that comes to mind is resiliency, right? A business that can be resilient against all the economic up and downs and a lot of change. So business that is adapting to change, that is also resilient and very clear on what its purpose is. Why is it here? I think the combination of those three things are what make a tenacious business, because a tenacious business is one that's going to stick around and it's going to keep achieving what it seeks to achieve.
And I'm wondering, George, with all of the people that you work with, I'm curious if there's an ironclad way that you would give to people when they want to start a business, sort of like a blueprint for business dummies. What would you put on that list of priorities if someone was starting a business and had no experience?
Starting a business. So what would I put on the list for someone starting a business? I would say get really clear about your core purpose. So why are you starting the business? And for many people, the first thing they're going to answer when they're starting a business is, I'm starting a business to make money. And it's like, no. That's the result of starting the business. Why are you starting the business? What is the problem you're coming in here to solve? So start with that. And then the second thing I'd have them do is, what makes you the best person to solve this problem, and what is unique about your way of solving this problem that people are willing to pay for? I would start them with those two questions, because it will really help get their thinking where it needs to be to grow a great business.
Yeah, and as you said, you know, George, a lot of people like the idea of being their own boss, but not every entrepreneur is really interested in running or building the business. They're just interested in the end result. So tell me about, when you talk about speaking to entrepreneurs who are just starting out and are excited about their idea, but they really need some honing on their business sort of operation, what do you tell them in order to avoid the business pitfall?
So there's a saying that is, business owners get rich, operators get burnt out. And what happens with people who are starting the business up, they usually are the ones that are doing everything. And as the business starts to grow, everything starts going through them. They're at the center of the hub of the wheel, and they get tired and they get resentful really quickly, and they get frustrated. So it's important to know, as you grow, you have to take yourself out of that center, which means you have to be willing to trust people. You have to be clear on what you're asking them to do. And you have to be willing to give up the stuff that you were doing. And for so many entrepreneurs, they look at their own value as what they're giving their company and their team, and they identify with the company. So it's really hard for them to step out of that role and let the team do the work, and not mess around with what the team is doing.
Yeah, just to follow up on that then, how do you think is the most effective way to build trust in business?
So that's a great question. There's an author, his name's Patrick Lencioni, and he writes books and books and books about how to build trust with the team. And there's different kinds of trust. There's trust in the sense that you're going to get the work done that you said you're going to get done. That's kind of a low level trust. If you get the work done, great, awesome. I trust you to get the work done in the future. But what he talks about is vulnerability based trust. And the way that I would describe that is with a story. And I remember listening to a Navy SEAL talk about how the Navy SEALs practice this. And he was giving a story about how they were doing a mission. And at the end of the mission, they always do this review of the mission so they can talk about how they can do it better. And what this guy did is in that review, he sat down with his teammate, his other operator, and he said, I left you unguarded when we went through the door. I wasn't watching your back. I said it was clear and you made a left, but I didn't check to the right. You could have got shot in the back and killed because I didn't do my job. Now that's vulnerability-based trust. His teammate didn't know that happened. There was no reason for him to tell his teammate why he failed and that he failed. He could have hid that. He could have just kept his mouth shut and everybody would have thought they did the job great. But he was vulnerable and trusting with his team to say, I need to do a better job. I'm sorry I let you down. If you got killed, it would have been my fault. That's vulnerability trust. And you get that from sharing with each other and being able to go into a place where you're not going to get criticized for sharing. You're not going to get fired for sharing. You're going to get a pat on the back for sharing and being vulnerable. And I think that attribute is really, really hard to find in a lot of jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. And George, I know that you've also built and ran businesses voted some of the best places to work. So tell me, what does that mean to you? And how do you think we can better build a collaborative culture where people want to come to work?
You know, that was my team. My team voted on it being the best place to work. So, you know, they all got behind it together and they just decided we're going to nominate my old company, Emulus. They were going to nominate it for best place to work. And they loved working there. They were always excited to come to work every day. Part of it was because, you know, in that environment, we listened to the team and the team would give us all kinds of feedback about what to do, what not to do. So everybody had a voice. Everybody felt like they were contributing to something bigger. And there was a great camaraderie with the team. And I think that's really what contributed to being a great workplace. You know, we enjoyed what we were doing. The right people were in the right seats doing the right things. And we just had fun working together. And so, you know, that's a little harder to do when you're a 1,000-person company or a 5,000-person company. But if you look at it at the team level and you just try to create a really great team of 5 to 10 people, and you do that throughout the organization, you can change the whole organization to be a great company to work for.
Yeah, George, I'm curious, as you look at the landscape of today's society, how do you think business and entrepreneurship can really help to solve some of the bigger sort of societal issues that we're dealing with today?
You know what? That's a great question. There is a guy, Salim Ismail, and he's created this thing called exponential organizations. And his premise is that the old model has put profits first and shareholders first when it comes to business. And the new model actually has to give more than that. The new model has to give back to society. It has to give back to the entrepreneur. It has to give back to the employees, the entrepreneurs. Everyone needs to win with the new business model. And I think we're far away from that right now, but I think we're starting to see the signs that business is starting to shift and think more about the employees, more about its impact, more about what it's doing to society, and not all about money, not all about profits all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, George, earlier I asked you about inclusivity in business, but I'm going to ask a slightly different question with the same theme. You know, when entrepreneurs or business people or CEOs and leaders look at hiring people, sometimes, you know, they have a very narrow way of looking at hiring people. And so, you know, I firmly believe that a diversity of perspective is a competitive advantage for businesses. So yep. How do you think we can better get hiring managers and entrepreneurs to better diversify the way that they look at hiring people?
I think it'd be great if we had some kind of incentives. We were better about giving incentives to hire people. I was at an event, I want to say back in June, and it was to raise awareness and raise funds for people who have had back injuries, right? So everyone there, not everyone, well, a good number of them there were in wheelchairs because they had back injuries. And when they got up and they started talking about the challenges they face because they're in a wheelchair, they said, you know, our society doesn't look at them. It kind of casts them off and disregards them because it doesn't see them as being as capable as anyone else because they're in a wheelchair. And they were talking about how the way that society is set up, it's like it doesn't ever consider anyone with disabilities and how they navigate and move through the world. And it really opened my eyes to it, because not having a disability, you look at the world through a certain lens. But when, like, they gave the example, they said, when you're in a wheelchair, you look at the world in a different way because now you're in a wheelchair. So how you navigate and move through the world forces you to see things differently. And to me, it's like, I would not have been challenged with that way of looking at things unless I went to the event and talked to a few people that were going through some of these challenges. And now that I understand it, I have a greater awareness and appreciation of it, right? So it allows me now in the future, when decisions come up, to think of them in a different light and say, how can I do this in a different way that makes it more inclusive for more people? So when you're thinking about from an entrepreneur's perspective around hiring, the same thing I think comes up is that entrepreneurs need to be aware that there's a multitude of people out there that can jump in and work on any particular problem. But if there was some kind of an incentive out there so that it caught my eye as an entrepreneur, it caught my eye to say, hey, if you hire more with disabilities, then we're going to reward you for that. So there's that incentive. Now, all of a sudden, I start to hire for that, and I realize everyone here is just as capable as everyone else. I think in time, the incentive can disappear, but we need something to bring the attention into the vision of the people who are hiring and running businesses so that they can start looking at that as an option.
Trust in business is essential. It can take years to establish and can be lost in a matter of seconds. So, what's the key to making sure that your business reputation remains intact? Morris provides these tidbits.
Yeah, so it's like a legacy, that the business creates a valuable legacy that lasts. To do that, I think it's got to be about impact, that you're creating a business that has impact. And with impact, you're going to have a legacy that's going to last. I mean, for better or for worse, however you want to look at the legacy of the iPhone, you got to look at Steve Jobs and you got to look at what he was able to do with the iPhone. He made a major impact in society by creating that product. Likewise, with any kind of business that's out there, if you can design and architect a really impactful business, it's going to last. It's going to have a legacy. I think it's really just about impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And George, tell me, from a business perspective, personally, what are you currently up to? I'm fascinated.
What am I currently up to?
Yeah, what keeps you busy?
Oh, Kevin, I'm busy a lot of the times with my clients. And if I'm not working with the clients directly, it's a lot of learning. And, you know, just like I said, lifelong entrepreneur, I'm a lifelong learner. You know, the more that I age, the more I realize what I don't know and how little I know. When I was a kid, I knew a hell of a lot more. I was sure of a hell of a lot more. I had all the answers when I was 10 years old. And the older I get, the more questions I have. So in terms of what I'm up to, it's a lot of working with the clients and just ongoing learning and just trying to figure out how best I can improve myself to help my customers out, help my clients out, and also to give back. I really like to create things that can be put out there for free for other people to use to grow their businesses, that they don't need to work with me. They can take some of these things and run on their own.
The more you can, it's like making a football roster. The more you can do, the more valuable you are, right?
Right, right, right. Servant leadership.
And tell me, George, what's the best part about living in Colorado? I'm fascinated.
Well, Kevin, if you could see the weather here today, you would understand that. It's blue skies and 75 degrees. Absolutely gorgeous. I think that's the best part of Colorado. 300 days of sunshine, beautiful weather, and the mountains are right in my backyard. So if I'm going for a hike or for a mountain bike ride, it's always great. I just love it out here. The only thing I miss, though, is I miss the ocean. We don't have enough water out here. So, you got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah, I have to tell you, George, with the type of cerebral palsy that I have, that swimming is big for me, so I'm always in the water. It's important, isn't it?
Yep. I love the water. I just can't get in it enough, and there's just not enough of it out here.
Well, you got snow to ski, though, right? Are you a skier?
We do. I'm a snowboarder, but one of the misconceptions about Colorado is everybody thinks that it's snowy here all the time, and they're just wrong. Like the mountains, they get snow up in the mountains, but most of Colorado is on the Front Range, and it's just outside. It's at the foot of the mountains. So we don't get as much snow as the mountains do. So you'll see pictures that they show in the news, and they have 2 feet of snow and people skiing through the powder. Now, you come down to my level here in Boulder, and it's sunny days. People are out in shorts, and they're hiking around in the middle of January, and there's no snow. So it's a bit of a misconception about Colorado.
It's a matter of perspective, isn't it?
It really is. Absolutely.
And George, tell me, I'm fascinated to ask you about, when you think about your business and life, non-negotiables, what comes to mind for you, buddy? What aren't you willing to compromise on in business and in life?
Ah, great question. My freedom of choice. I have to, and this is my personal side, I have to have the ability to master my own day, my own week, my own month, my own year, my own life. That's not something I'm willing to compromise. I don't do well with adhering to other people's structures and schedules. So that to me, I want to be able to leave the office during the day and go pick my kids up from school. I want to be able to go to work late and take my kids to school, make breakfast with them. I want to be able to take a week or two off when I want to go on a trip somewhere. And I want to be able to afford to be able to do that. So to me, freedom and the ability to choose is not a compromise I'm willing to make. I'll take far less money to have freedom.
A survey conducted by market research firm Maru Blue on behalf of CIBC found 2/3 of business owners who responded to the survey admit that they're working longer hours since starting their own business. And 61% of business owners say their stress levels are significantly higher than when they were conventionally employed. Therefore, I pose the question to Morris, how can entrepreneurs establish more business versatility and create more free time?
Business versatility and having freedom in business. To me, business versatility is more about the adaptability of the business, the ability of the business to adjust to changes in the marketplace. and then freedom in business. That one to me seems more like my ability to choose a particular path. You know, business versatility is more or less, could be more or less, the circumstances around you are changing and the business needs to adapt to it. Freedom in business is more the business is strong and you have the ability to pick your own direction, to go your own path. So one feels like more of a reaction to the environment around it. The other feels more like operating from within the business to steer it.
Yeah, and George, my final question for you this afternoon has to do with your own personal and professional legacy and how you want that to be defined.
My personal and business life, how I want to define it. You know, this one's a funny topic because I've been talking about it a lot these last few weeks. I think we do more damage than good by creating this idea of a work life and a personal life. There's just life and how you navigate life. And, you know, sometimes you're going to be a little bit more in the work area. Sometimes you're a little bit more in the personal area. And there's really no, to me, there's really no black and white cutoff. It's an ebb and flow based on where you're at and what you're trying to accomplish. And what are your goals? What are your goals in life? And if you're pursuing your goals, sometimes one of those things, your personal life may actually take a hit because you're pursuing your professional life a little bit more. But that's just life. And that's why this work-life balance thing and the idea of the two things, I think we do ourselves a disservice by talking by looking at life that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And George, finally, tell me if people want to get connected with the work that you do, what's the best way they can do that?
They go over to my website, so they can just go to gmorris.com, and there's everything you need to know to contact me right up there. Plenty of contact information there.
Fantastic. Well, George, I really enjoyed our conversation about business diversification and innovation, my friend. Your work in the space and time on my behalf is most appreciated. I want to wish you a great weekend, and I want to thank you for being here this afternoon. It's most appreciated.
Yeah, and Kevin, thank you for your time, and thank you for the great questions.